Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. 6 months ago, Hurricane Helene paid the Southeast an unwelcomed visit. Her presence in the mountains of western North Carolina was particularly destructive. Heavy rains inundated rivers and streams. Roaring waters rushed through the streets of towns, destroying homes, businesses, and infrastructure, while wiping some of those towns off the map. The death toll in our mountains rose again this week to 107 as another body was recovered. For the living, their lives have been profoundly disrupted. The economic consequences have been devastating, and although over $1 billion has been appropriated by the General Assembly, with more coming from the federal government, the price tag continues to rise. Complicating recovery efforts this spring were wildfires driven by dry conditions, wind, and an abundance of fuel created by the fallen trees and debris Helene left behind. Still, some of the mountains want you to know they are open for business. Much of the economy of mountain communities depends on tourism, and they want and need you to come even as they continue to recover. But are they really ready? And just where do recovery efforts stand? We find out this hour as we welcome back Will Hoffman. He is the growth and development reporter for the Asheville Citizen-Times. Gerard Albert III is also here. He is the Western North Carolina Rural Communities reporter for Blue Ridge Public Radio. And we're going to be joined in a moment or two by WFAE's climate reporter, Zachary Turner. He's also with us this hour. Welcome to all three of you. Good morning.
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 So, Will, you were on this program just a couple of months ago. I think it was about 100 days out from the actual hurricane itself. How have recovery efforts progressed from the last time you joined us?
You know, over the past few months, one of the things that I think about pretty heavily is debris. We're seeing a lot of debris removed from the public right-of-ways and from waterways. That's a huge change spiritually. Literally to not have to pass by a destroyed business or destroyed, collection of debris every single day. And so it has progressed positively. We've seen people reopen slowly still, and more roads reopen. I-40 reopened, which is a huge boost to the regional trucking economy and just travel in general. You no longer have to go around to Tennessee or through some country back road to get where you need to go. So it's been positive, I would say. But there are still things, I would think, with funding especially, that we're still anticipating. We're still looking to receive already allotted funding and have that funding dispersed to, say, farmers. That's one thing that
Sitting at a safe distance away and watching all this on television over the last several months, there's a huge, an enormous, an unfathomable amount of debris that you folks have to contend with, from fallen tree limbs to destroyed buildings to everything in known creation. Where is it all going? I'm just curious about that. Where are you putting it all?
Yeah, it's a good question. So if you're driving around Buncombe County, you might notice a few what might look like off in the distance wildfires or just massive chunks of trees and, you know, maybe like pieces of other debris that looks like an amalgamation of like something you would never know. But what they're doing is that they're taking these to these specified debris sites, typically, a county contractor or a contractor through the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is operating the site and they're burning it. So we see a lot of these burn sites coming through. I think about one in Swannanoa. It's this pretty big, massive hunks of trees, and you can see the fire from, the highway pretty much. And it's fine because they've got this machine. I forget what it's called, but it's something under the lines of like Curtain Burner 3000. And they're just burning the wood and other debris. They take other debris to like landfills or properly dispose of it, whether that be through a recycling center or if they have some kind of waste technical system, they have to do that as well. That's generally speaking where debris is. Yeah.
We're seeing stronger, more frequent, wetter storms, drier conditions as well, which lead to fires and all this debris that we're talking about, Zach. And I'm just wondering, as the climate reporter, all of this, you're also the environmental reporter. You have to get rid of this stuff. But what is it doing to the environment?
Having all of this storm debris?
Yeah.
I mean?
And getting rid of it, burning it.
So burning it, I mean, right now we have a lot of our prescribed burn associations, our North Carolina Forest Service, they're working on conducting these prescribed burns when they're able to, when the conditions are favorable and safe to conduct these prescribed fires. And that's a very natural part of these ecosystems that are adapted to burns. And this is all part of that effort to reduce these fuels. Having the debris on the ground, it is changing a lot of aspects of these forest ecosystems. For example, you have these canopies that have opened up because so many of the trees are down, and that is creating areas for more light to hit the ground. New, smaller vegetation is popping up, which can produce more fuel for wildfires. You're also potentially seeing new habitat for species as these down trees start to rot and decompose, and so I think at this point, it's just different in a lot of ways. And some of those ways increase wildfire risk and will continue to increase wildfire risk for years to come.
So Gerard Albert's with us. He is the rural community reporter for Blue Ridge Public Radio. And Asheville and some of the other large communities have been well covered in the aftermath of Hurricane Helene. We've all seen stories of recovery and the damage done on television. But some of the smaller, more rural areas may have escaped our attention. Are they getting the help, Gerard, that they need?
It's a mixed answer. I'm thinking of a place like Bat Cave, for example, which is southeast of Asheville, got rocked pretty hard during the storm. They have very few businesses. Most of them were destroyed and most of them were tourist-based. The big thing in Batcave right now is the roads. And I think as I go out to a lot of these rural communities that were already hard to reach or maybe pretty well off the beaten path, their roads, I mean, were just destroyed. I mean, chunks and chunks of asphalt down below in the gorge and in the rivers. And it's just made it so much harder to navigate and so unpredictable for the future of receiving any tourists, even with the wildfires down in the areas that they were down in Polk and Henderson counties. Part of the reason they were so hard to fight is because a lot of the roads along the Green River Gorge where the fires were had been washed away. So now they're replaced by these steeper, less stable gravel roads that can barely hold a car, let alone a massive fire engine. So they were just harder to get to. And that's a problem that among many, some of which Zach listed, that are going to make these wildfires worse.
Gerard, you and Will are both reporters, obviously, but you're also people who live in the area that you're covering. And I'm just curious as to how your lives are in the immediate aftermath of this storm. I'm sure they were turned upside down. For you personally, have things returned to something like normal, Will?
You know, it's funny because I think after Helene, as being a reporter, I think a lot of things aren't normal anymore. We're just adjusting to a new normal. I think for me, yeah, for the most part, you know, my mom and Boone, she was okay, fortunately. You know, we got very, very fortunate that the rest of my family was kind of not in the region at the time. And so I feel very lucky. And we've gone back to trying to just get out the best stories about our community that we can. I'm fortunate. Yeah.
Gerard?
Yeah, it's hard to, I didn't get too much of a groundwork for normalcy before the storm hit because I had just moved to Asheville in July. So I had about a month and a half to try and feel normal. There was a long while during the storm where I couldn't get home. I was out in a rural part of the coverage area, down a little south of Brevard, during the storm and got stuck out there for a couple of days. So I'm no longer stuck. Things are more normal. I do live along the Swannanoa River, so every day going home, I'm reminded of just how much debris and how much damage the storm caused. There's still gutted buildings, you know, along the river, right on the bridge. But yeah, I mean, I don't think, coming from Florida, where hurricanes are pretty prevalent and top of mind, I don't think you necessarily move on. You just, the story, stories you tell are always tinged with the effects of the storm for a long while.
Yeah. Sorry. I would also just say is that it, for the community, it does feel like there is a before and a after. You know, there is this almost feeling that this will linger over the rest of our community and all of the communities of Western North Carolina for, you know, years and years to come. And so there really isn't returning to that normal, in my opinion. It's really just adjusting.
Helene washed out a tremendous number of roads and bridges and severely damaged or destroyed infrastructure that modern communities depend on. Asheville's water system was out of commission for quite a while. Cell phones failed, etc. NCDOT, however, says that 90% of damaged roads have reopened and over 270 bridges have been repaired. Will, would you say that things are pretty much back to normal, or is that 90% figure a little misleading, or is it dead on correct?
I think Gerard made a good point about 5 minutes ago, talking about roads in Bat Cave and in these other communities, where that 10%, that reported 10% lingering, missing road, is going to be really hard to get back. I mean, it's going to cost millions and millions and millions of dollars to repair routes like US 19 West in Yancey County. Other routes in Yancey or in Madison are going to be more complex to return and restore over time. And one thing I think you're going to see is private bridges. These are costly and very intensive infrastructure elements that you have to have engineering and permits for. And most property owners, you know, they bought their property and the bridge was already there, or the bridge was built by a local community member, or, you know, by a previous property owner years and years ago. And all of these bridges were wiped away. So that 90% number is accurate. Probably the 6,900 sites, you know, that they reported as damaged are mostly returned, but that remaining 10% and those private bridges are going to take a long time, years to restore.
U.S. Secretary of Transportation Sean Duffy announced recently that the Federal Highway Administration successfully cleared a number of legal barriers to allow NCDOT to acquire construction material from the adjacent Pisgah National Forest sooner than anticipated. Evidently, those working on repairs were expecting to have to bring in a lot of the material they needed from about 25 to 50 miles away, and being able to go into the forest to do this evidently cuts it down to 1 to 3 miles. Gerard, I only have about a minute left in the segment. Well, what materials are they getting? What was it necessary to cut red tape for to get materials from the Pisgah National Forest?
As specific as I can get, not being an environmental or climate reporter, it's rock. And obviously shipping in that rock is burdensome and costly and takes a while. And now they're able to get it. There was a similar conversation for I-40 with the gorge down below, the Pigeon River Gorge. It's something that environmentalists are very upset about. But NCDOT and I think a lot of drivers are okay with, because it means a faster repair.
We have to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the effects of climate change going forward, what this storm did, what it portends for the future. And then we'll also talk about rural communities recovering and about tourism and what that means for the area. It's Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about recovery in the mountains of North Carolina from Hurricane Helene. 6 months out. We're joined by Will Hoffman, who's the growth and development reporter for the Asheville Citizen Times. Gerard Albert is the Western North Carolina Rural Communities reporter for Blue Ridge Public Radio. That's a mouthful. And Zach Turner is with us. He's our climate reporter here at WFAE. And I want to bring you into this a little more intensively, Zach. Climate change is resulting in two weather trends that have impacted Western North Carolina in the last 6 months. Climate change was the what created warmer atmospheres that hold more water until those atmospheric conditions can't hold the water anymore and has to release it. That's led to wetter, stronger, longer lasting storms. It creates more of an appetite for hurricanes, etc. It also creates hotter, drier conditions, oddly enough, which has led to the wildfires that Western North Carolina and other parts of the state have experienced recently. Is what we've been witnessing an anomaly, or is it just the beginning of more to come?
That was a good climate lesson, Mike.
I used to do the weather on television. I know that.
Well, I have to point out, as a climate reporter, weather and climate are not, while they're linked, not the same thing.
That's correct.
These are, I guess, emblematic of what we've seen over the last few months. In the last 6 months have been highly emblematic of a trend with regards to North Carolina and climate change. We are seeing that whiplash going between extremely wet events to being very hot and dry. It's kind of what we've seen over the past few months in terms of going from Helene, very wet, very precipitous, going to this moderate drought we've been experiencing, and these wildfires. But there are other things at play that determine whether or not, like, for example, in 2025, whether we're going to have a really bad hurricane season. We have these cycles of El Nino and La Nina that are coming together that are interacting with this overall trend towards having a warmer atmosphere and a warmer ocean, which provides more energy for these storms. So in general, we have these cycles that are happening anyway with our sort of like the atmospheric conditions. Having more energy in that system from climate change just increases the likelihood that you're going to have more severe storms, that you're going to have potentially more frequent storms.
And of course, when things get dry and hot and windy, that can sometimes lead to wildfires, which we have now witnessed. And we have all this debris on the ground in these forests or in the Western North Carolina mountains because of the trees falling during Hurricane Helene. They're talking about moderate to catastrophic damage in the Western North Carolina National Forest, Pisgah National Forest. What does that mean? Does it just mean that the trees are down? What does that mean?
I think broadly speaking, I mean, you've got landslides, rock slides, and you have these down trees. So it's a combination of those things which is creating these conditions that over time, as those down trees continue to dry out, are going to create conditions for more potentially severe wildfires. I mean, wildfires are perfectly normal in North Carolina. We're used to having these relatively frequent, intense wildfires that are burning, but they're not scorching the earth. They're not burning live trees. But with all this extra down fuel, you have the potential to have really intense blazes, really severe fires. That's when you'll start seeing effects beyond just reduced air quality. You'll start to see potentially erosion and reduced water quality in the area and more of these negative impacts associated with severe burns versus these quick burning intense burns.
But these wildfires can do, it's like cleaning up. They clean up some of the underbrush and make things better, but has that impeded the recovery efforts in Western North Carolina, or has it actually helped them in some ways?
Having the wildfires?
Yeah.
I think it's hard to, I don't know if it's helped necessarily. It's just a natural cycle. Like, having these wildfires is not unusual for Western North Carolina. And even now, the main issue that our first responders were experiencing were access issues. They were trying to access the perimeters of these fires. They were not able to get where they needed to go because of the downed trees. It wasn't necessarily that they were catching fire. That was less frequent because they're not dried out yet. But over the next 10 years, over the next decade, we're going to see those down trees become more available for these blazes.
So Western North Carolina had to deal with Hurricane Helene and its aftermath. They've had to deal with these wildfires. And just recently, the Hurricane Center has released its forecast for this coming season, which is about to begin. The National Hurricane Center is predicting 13 to 18 named storms this year, of which 7 to 10, they say, could become hurricanes, and 3 to 5 of those could intensify into major hurricanes with the risk of a direct hit to the southeast, higher than normal. Hurricane concerns are mostly focused along the coastline, but what happened in the mountains with Helene and other portions of the inland southeast, a fluke, or is this the new normal because of weather patterns and the increased water in the atmosphere? And heat.
You'll get a state like North Carolina. There are basically two ways that we can get hit by a hurricane. It can either come, from the Atlantic and hit us, straight on along the coast, or it's going to come up through the Gulf, which is what happened with Helene. If it's the new, I don't know if I would say it's the new normal as of yet, but the Gulf is warmer and that provides more energy for these hurricanes as they're coming up from the Gulf, which can lead to what we saw with Hurricane Helene, this rapid intensification where it goes in short order from a tropical storm to a category 4 hurricane with very little warning. And so if we get more hurricanes coming up through the Gulf and intensifying there, then there's a likelihood that those hurricanes could travel up and hit North Carolina in the west.
So will the National Hurricane Center, which operates under the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, says preparedness will be the key to mitigating potential damage from any hurricanes that may experience landfall in the coming year. Is Western North Carolina, with all you've had to contend with, is it prepared? Are you prepared?
I would say because we're still recovering, many are still unprepared for any kind of major storm or disaster that could come to the region. You asked the question earlier about whether or not places are open. There are still many places that are not open. And if they received a flood again, there would be probably more severe damages. Thankfully, people have kind of moved up from these flood zones slightly because the flood zones forced them to move. For the most part, which is an unfortunate, it's a tragedy. But no, I would not say that over time, we'll get more prepared, but I would not say that we're currently prepared.
Gerard, rescue and recovery efforts were hampered, particularly in the more rural mountainous areas, because of the terrain and because of washed out roads and bridges. They simply couldn't get to people who needed their help. Some people, Asheville, the major cities, probably have recovered to a certain degree or to a greater degree. How are people, some of whom lost their homes and still live in temporary housing, how are businesses and government officials weathering this storm after the storm? What is it doing to their patients, their physical health, their mental health to still be living in these conditions 6 months later?
You talk to folks out here, and it's a mix of being grateful that they have a place, and being, having this energy of perseverance, but also just frustration and exhaustion. We're a little over 6 months out now, and like you said, there are still a lot of people in temporary housing. For those 6 months, there were a lot of people in hotel rooms with everything they salvaged from their homes. So, sure, a hotel room sounds luxurious to some, but if you're carrying around your life's possession in garbage bags, that can get to you pretty quick. And now we've seen some, obviously the wildfires, I think, brought a lot of feelings back, both with the mandatory evacuations and it had destroyed some homes out here. It brought back some feelings of the storm, even for us here in the newsroom, being on almost 24/7 to keep updating folks. So I think when it rains or the heavy winds come or something like the wildfires come, there is a lot of post-traumatic stress that people feel because of the storm and what happened.
The General Assembly has allocated now about more than $1 billion, with a B, in recovery effort money, with more likely to come. Some of that money is in the form of loans to governments and businesses. But we found out that last week, a lot of these local governments and small businesses are reluctant to take the money because they don't want to go into debt. Do you know what the impact, Gerard, of this reluctance is having on returning things to normal? Is it slowing down your efforts?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things slowing down the efforts. I can't speak. I mean, we cover, I think, about 17 counties. And I think very few of them, one of them that I cover, Henderson County, was able to weather the storm financially and not have to make cuts. Whereas in Buncombe County and Asheville, they've had to pause hiring and cut hours on certain things. And then, of course, the federal freezes in aid don't add any help to that. But yeah, I mean, even like you had asked Zach a while ago with the wildfires and, you know, usually a wildfire prescribed burn or something like that will help clear things out. And it's a part of nature. You know, these wildfires for about 2 weeks impeded tourism in all of these areas, in Polk County, which has a lot of outdoor tourism, and Henderson County the same. So there's just been kind of no breaks or no time to catch your breath if you're one of these rural counties that count on a little bit of tourism and maybe just want a little bit of normalcy.
How would you describe FEMA's response or that of other governmental organizations in the state, et cetera, in coming to the aid of those who need it? Because we've been getting a mixed bag of reports down here, and sometimes they're coming from citizens who are unhappy with the speed of that response.
I mean, I think what Western North Carolina learned pretty quickly is that disaster response in America is complex. It's a very interconnected web of different organizations at the state and federal level. That for FEMA, for example, you know, some needs that local communities have, FEMA doesn't always have a way to fill them. They have to go through either the Community Development Block Grant Disaster Recovery Funding Program, which is a FEMA program that's kind of through HUD. It gets approved by HUD, and that's disaster recovery funds that can be spent basically on whatever they want. A community like Asheville, can decide how to plan out these funding programs. And we've actually seen that program politicized recently through HUD and with the Trump administration kind of saying, oh, you've got DEI in your plan, we're going to put it on pause, or, you know, we won't approve it. So it's complex. And I would generally say that I think a lot of people still think it feels slow. I think a lot of people would say that they were expecting to see things rebuilt quicker, but it also just takes time. A lot of these things just take time.
And I'm curious about whether this impatience is because it's difficult to live under these conditions for an extended period of time. So that makes your patience run very thin, very quickly. And how much of it is because people are hearing a raft of mis and disinformation about what to expect and what has actually happened or not happened, as is the case? And there was a lot of that swirling around the recovery efforts in Western North Carolina, particularly during the presidential campaign, and much of it was coming from Donald Trump. But the Asheville Citizen Times kept locals in touch and answered their questions with a series of columns. Blue Ridge Public Radio was considered a beacon during this crisis. And CBS News has reported numerous times on an AM radio station up in your neck of the woods that really was a lifeline for a lot of people. They were the only form of communication, getting news out to people who had no way to learn that information in any other way because the cell phone system didn't work and they were trapped in their homes. The media is often distrusted. I want to hear from the three of you. Did local media, did national media's reporting on Hurricane Helene and its recovery from the storm help or hurt that reputation? Are you guys more trusted now or less? Will.
Well, I think the things that you identified are absolutely true about local media. You know, I couldn't be prouder to be in the same media landscape as BPR and the other radio stations and other reporters that have like worked tirelessly through a natural disaster that knocked out broadband. You know, you couldn't really get anything out for the first couple of days. And so when national media kind of came in, which is an experience that I think a lot of local reporters had, you know, it was complex. I think some people did a good job. I think of a couple reporters with one national outlet that I was like, yeah, thank you for coming. I know that you're from the region, and I actually caught up with them afterward, you know, and they helped. But on the other side, I think a lot of the misinformation on social media was fueled partially by maybe people coming in, reporting a few things, and then leaving. And, you know, when you come to a community, you do have to report out the full story, which means kind of staying there. So, you know, I don't know, Gerard, if you have any thoughts on that too.
Gerard?
We're living through it.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of times in radio, you know that there are people listening, but you don't really know. But when the storm hit, I mean, there were just so many physical notes left on our door, people coming in to tell us like we were the only reason they found food or water that day, because, you know, it is boring radio, but we would just, you know, every 15 minutes or so list the stations where you can find water and food in the days following the storm. I mean, we, to say we lived in the station is kind of an understatement, and just we took over broadcasting. We would go, I think, 18 hours a day almost, just on live. We would go out, come back, report back. I have never had a bad interaction out here, out storm reporting. And I've gone to sites where people from philosophies that are usually negative towards press are, and they were just so happy that we were out there telling their story, especially, you know, I cover the rural areas. So Zach and I actually took my car out to some pretty sketchy roads and bridges, and we saw the destruction out there. But no, I mean, I think there's a paper up near Boone where the head editor is also a volunteer fireman. And I mean, he was covering the storm and then going out and saving people and making sure his staff was okay. So I think locally, again, the local outlets gained a lot of respect. And like Will said, it wasn't even like national outlets as much as local social media bloggers coming and spreading disinformation.
Gerard Alberts with the Blue Ridge Public Radio, Will Hoffman with the Asheville Citizen Times, and Zach Turner, I'm going to let you go. I know you wanted to talk about this, but I'm moving on to a different topic. So Zach is our climate reporter for WFAE News. We have to take a break. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and Our New South. This Charlotte-based Levine Museum podcast explores today's South through social, political, and cultural topics in their historical context, featuring conversations with locals driving change. Our New South is available on all podcast platforms.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Hurricane Helene recovery and where we are in the western North Carolina mountains as we approach the beginnings of tourist season. And we're going to talk about tourism and how ready they are for you to come back. Will Hoffman is with us. He is the growth and development reporter for the Asheville Citizen Times. And Gerard Albert is Western North Carolina rural community reporter with Blue Ridge Public Radio. When businesses are flooded out or washed away, when revenue from tourism ends, people lose jobs. What was the impact of Helene, and is unemployment the unemployment that resulted from that easing off, Will? Is it coming back?
So immediately after the storm, our unemployment rate spiked to over 10%. We're the, you know, in Buncombe County, we had the highest unemployment rate in the state. Slowly since then, over the past 6 months, we've seen that unemployment rate come down. But during the beginning of January, you know, beginning of 2025, we did see that go back up. I mean, it followed, you know, statewide trends of unemployment kind of ticking up slightly in North Carolina. But we've not seen it, you know, be as bullish perhaps as some people anticipated. We still have a 6.8 unemployment rate as of the beginning of the year. That's about 9,800 people, and a lot of people are still citing problems getting a job, keeping a job, or keeping the hours that they once had. That's a really big issue when you're a service worker and you want to get the hours you want to get, and they're saying, hey, we have to cut you today. Hey, we have to cut you today. It's just not the same as it was before Helene.
Which is where tourism comes in, and I want to get to that in a second. But prices were going up. We had inflation before the hurricane, and we have more inflation now, and moves by the Trump administration just in the last 2 weeks are likely to raise prices even more. A lot of our lumber for construction comes from Canada. Tariffs have been imposed on Canada. They're not backing down in Canada. So the cost of construction is going to rise even more than it already has. So when you face all of that, that tsunami, and where the jobs have come back, are they coming back at the same wage level? Are they coming back at a higher level? Are they coming back at a lower level? Are people going to be able to afford the reconstructions efforts?
You know, I would say that it's difficult to tell right now, one, whether or not people are getting paid a higher wage, because for the most part, most businesses are still just trying to keep up from all the business they lost during Helene. I mean, that's still, it was October, it was peak season, they lost a ton of money. You know, an estimated, I think over $500 million is what the local tourism development authority, that was the estimate they gave out. And so with unemployment still being pretty high and people still not being able to say, keep a job, we're hearing some workers are, you know, facing the threat of eviction or having to find rental assistance still. And we are 6 months out from the storm. You know, when housing, which is a basic, you know, need and necessity, is basically in jeopardy. I mean, I would not say that, you know, our workforce is necessarily in a pretty solid place right now.
Well, speaking of workforces, a lot of the rescue efforts, a lot of the firefighters, et cetera, are in short supply. And maybe the supply is being cut even more, Gerard, because the government, the federal government, is cutting personnel left and right. I don't know how many federal employees are engaged in your neck of the woods or how many of them are engaged in recovery efforts. But have you noticed an impact yet from these DOGE cuts that are taking place in Washington?
Well, we saw a weird, or I guess normal for this administration, flip-flop with the U.S. Forest Service in firing some of their employees and then rehiring them back almost as the wildfires were starting to get bad. How wildfires get fought and who fights them is jurisdictional and complex, but I think what we're seeing more with the wildfires and recovery in particular here is the State Forest Service, which for years has been understaffed and they say underpaid. You know, they have 100 vacancies. Many of them, I think a quarter of them, are here in the West. So, you know, that's not only a lack of people to fight the fire, it's a lack of experienced people to fight the fires. And those vacancies, I know, hurt us a lot in these efforts, in addition to everything we talked about this hour with the Helene debris and the Helene damage impeding the work of these firefighters.
Let's talk about the comeback and people coming back to the mountains. The spring, summer, and fall, I guess, are the big tourist seasons in Western North Carolina. Helene resulted in millions of dollars in lost revenue, as you've referred to, Will. Are you ready for the influx of visitors that you would normally like to see? You can talk about Asheville specifically, but then spread it out into the other communities. Are you all ready?
Broadly speaking, I would say that it depends on where you go. Asheville, as in downtown Asheville, is pretty ready. People want to see tourists come back. You know, businesses are looking for that kind of activity. But if you go down to the River Arts District, it's going to be a lot of businesses that are not open. Businesses that still, you know, buildings, even historic buildings that look pretty damaged. I would say the same for communities like Bat Cave, Chimney Rock, Lake Lure. They're not going to have a traditional tourist season. Don't expect them to have a traditional tourist season. Don't go to these communities expecting to partake in the same things you might typically, you know, look online, and plan your trip accordingly if you are going to visit those communities.
Where do you get the information about what communities really are ready, what communities really want you there, what communities might be hurt by your coming there because they're not ready yet?
There is an online travel advisory map for Western North Carolina that is basically a coalition of local governments and tourism agencies saying, okay, we've talked to, you know, mainly the business owners and maybe some local officials as well to talk about the residents and how they're feeling. And that's online. You can kind of just, if you look up and go to Visit NC, it has a Hurricane Helene travel advisory website, and you can kind of see, you know, get an idea of where it's open and where it's not.
Gerard, a lot of people come to the mountains, particularly in the summertime, to hike, to whitewater raft, to camp out. Most of, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, most of the recreational rivers in western North Carolina were hit pretty hard by Helene, and a lot of those rivers were jammed up with debris that was left floating in the water after the hurricane left. Are there areas that are open? Are there areas that are closed for the time being for those activities?
Yes, to both. It's something I personally struggle with because I like to do all of those activities, and a lot of the trails that I love and sites that I love are closed, or you can't reach them because large chunks of the Blue Ridge Parkway are closed. The further west you go, I'm thinking west of Canton and areas like Silva and Cherokee along the Quala boundary there, Nantahala, you know, saw less damage there. I know that almost immediately after the storm, there was a community of whitewater rafters who were eager to be the first ones to raft the new direction almost of these rivers because they had changed the landscape so much. I'm not sure how much of that went on because of all the debris, like you said, but I know that those areas that rely on that outdoor tourism are working to clean up and get their spots ready.
The town of Saluda hosts a lot of outdoor adventure enthusiasts every year. Saluda town manager Steve Orr spoke with Asheville TV station WLOS-TV, and he said that he was optimistic long-term, but that there would be bumps this summer because of closed roads, one of which is the main access to the Green River. Will, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, so I think Gerard would have the same experience I did. I recently visited the Green River Cove Road, which is this stretch of the Green River that is the main access road for all, pretty much any Green River recreational businesses. And there were fires in the Green River Gorge as you pass through the road, and most of the river is still getting cleaned up. Businesses, you know, where they used to be might not have safe access points for the river right now, and the river has totally changed the landscape. So I think these recreational businesses are still figuring out what that means for them. You know, I reached out to a few already actually along the Green River, and I think maybe they're hesitant right now to talk about, you know, how long this might take, which I don't have an estimate on. I think people still really want to go to the Green River to go tubing. For my money, it's the best place, you know, and, you know, in the region that you can probably, you know, put in a tube and just sit for a few hours. So it's going to change tremendously.
Gerard, in terms of getting to your favorite destination, whatever it may be, from this part of the state, and in terms of getting from one place to another in your part of the state, what should visitors expect? Should they expect an easy drive into and out of these communities? Should they anticipate traffic backups because perhaps maybe only one lane is open because of construction or whatever going on in those areas? How would you describe what we are about to experience as we inundate you with visits?
It's been said before, and I think the reason it's been said before is because the storm's damage was so widespread, but it really does depend where you go. I'm thinking, of course, of taking a trip along I-40 that has just opened up. You're gonna see a lot of delays because it's a one-lane road and there's a lot of trucks and you cannot go fast. I think in other areas, you know, so I'm thinking of Saluda, where I had to go a lot because of the wildfires. One of the main roads that connects Saluda and Tryon is closed. But otherwise, I mean, you can drive through Saluda and over there pretty easily. It's really just a matter of how repaired the roads are. And, you know, Will mentioned Chimney Rock and Bat Cave and Lake Lore. Those areas don't want people driving through. They will have attendees basically at the roads, turning you around if you're not supposed to be there, if you don't live there, own a business there, because it just impedes recovery work if you go through.
Of all the restaurants and bed and breakfasts and hotels and other shops and businesses that were open pre-Helene, how many of them would you say throughout Western North Carolina are up and running and looking for customers today? Gerard.
That is a hard stat. I know there is a number floating around that Will might know better, covering the city a bit more than I do. I'm not sure if Will has that number.
Will?
Yeah, I would say, I don't actually think that there's a number right now of how many might be open or closed. But what I will say is that a decent number of them have reopened, especially in downtown and in the Upper River Arts District. But areas like Biltmore Village are still working on phasing their recovery. They really haven't opened anything in Biltmore Village. There are a couple of things that you can like go and see, but for the most part, if it was a hotel and if it wasn't in a floodplain, it's probably been reopened. If it's a business, especially I think restaurants, and it's close, they might be reopened or they might be phasing their reopening. But a lot of them also are reporting difficulties from the storm, and some of them are closing too. A decent number. I don't have that stat, but I do know that there's a number of them that are considering their future.
For those who maybe have never been there, but they've seen the commercials on television for the Biltmore House is open. It was relatively undamaged by all of this, as were the grounds that surround Biltmore House. It's Biltmore Village, which is just outside the entrance, that was inundated with floodwaters. But I'm also curious about the Arts District, because a lot of people were beginning to find the Arts District as tourists and enjoyed going through the various buildings and looking at what it had to offer. That was completely destroyed, from what I can tell by television. Have a lot of those artists found other places to go? Have a lot of the breweries in that area found other places to go? Or are they just missing off the landscape today?
I mean, right now, a lot of people are considering rebuilding, and what that looks like for the artists. I think that's probably the most unfortunate situation that we've seen, in terms of the impacts from the damages in the River Arts District, is that, I think of businesses like Marquee that house these artists, and they lost a lot of their art. Some of it's getting replaced through federal grants or federal funding, or even state level sources. But for the most part, they're, while people are offering some studio spaces for these artists to be featured, I think a lot of people are still figuring out what their next steps are as artists. And those businesses essentially have not fully reopened in the arts district. I mean, you're going to go to the upper arts district and you're going to have businesses reopened, but for the most part, the lower arts district near the river is still in a process of doing
Gerard,
that.
you reported on something recently that is a sign, at least to me, from the outside looking in, of things returning to normal. You reported on a recent town hall meeting at which the Democratic chair of the Buncombe County Commission introduced Republican Congressman Chuck Edwards and praised him for his efforts to secure federal disaster relief for the area. But that town hall meeting quickly descended into a shouting match in which attendees posing questions were not posing questions about recovery. They wanted to talk about whether the congressman supports Donald Trump's positions, as well as Trump and Musk's actions on federal workers and military veterans and Ukraine and USAID and the rule of law. What does that tell you about the state of recovery in your part of the world?
It doesn't tell me much as a person who has to travel throughout this part of the state. That town hall, was open to about 300 people. There are hundreds more outside. And the people that are going to come to this town hall and that did are mostly older, mostly white, mostly people that aren't dealing with recovery issues because they have that time to go and do that. They, you know, people that have luckily escaped it and have those concerns, you know, it's normal, but it doesn't tell me much about their recovery efforts. They're still ongoing and will be for a while.
Gerard Albert is the Western North Carolina Rural Community Reporter for Blue Ridge Public Radio, and Will Hoffman, who was with us a couple of months ago, is the Growth and Development Reporter for the Asheville Citizen Times. Good luck in your recovery. Good luck to your tourist season as well up there this year. And thank you for the hour.
Thank you.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. We have additional production help from Jesse Steinmetz. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.